Hey there, it's Jingle Jared. Before we get started, I just wanted to tell you about one of my favorite music podcasts, Broken Record from Pushkin Industries. Broken Record is the podcast for music fans. Legendary producer Rick Rubin, author Malcolm Gladwell, former New York Times editor Bruce Hedlund, and Justin Richmond get the musicians you love to open up about their lives, their inspirations, and their craft. And usually, they'll play a song or two as well. Past guests have included Questlove, Pentatonix, Roseanne Cash, and David Byrne. This season, you'll hear from Jack White and the Raconteurs, Brandi Carlile and Tanya Tucker, Tyler, the Creator, and more. Our very own T-Bone Burnett was also featured on Broken Record, where he and Rick Rubin have an in-depth and honest conversation about process, artist's progression, and audience. T-Bone tells Rick about producing Robert Plant and Alison Krauss's Grammy-winning album, Raising Sand, as well as other artists he's worked with like Sarah Bareilles. He even plays a few never-heard-before songs. Here's a short clip.
Are you at a point now where you know sort of where the songs fit? And is there ever a calling to like say, okay, in the end of the second act, we need to add a song in this spot, and this is what it needs to accomplish in the story?
Yeah. In fact, I just wrote, we did they call it a 29-hour reading, which is you get all the actors up on their feet and they read the parts, and you do it without costumes or without sets, but you get the gist of it, the tempo of the thing. And I realized after the last one, I didn't have a beginning song for Roy and I didn't have an ending song for Dale. So I went back and I did that. I wrote a good song called Out of Nowhere for Roy to start off with, so you meet him in strength. And then Dale needed a song at the end, a heavy duty number at the end. So yeah, and I'm sure we're gonna open it in Atlanta in 2020, in the fall of 2020. And I'm sure once we get into the process of really getting it up and getting it in front of audiences, there'll be a lot more changes to come.
Yeah. Beautiful. I love the peace and surrender line. It's really good.
Yeah.
Really good.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. And I love the tagline. The hook line is great.
Yeah. Everybody wants to live forever, but nobody wants to get old.
So good. So good.
But when I accepted this commission, to write these songs for a musical. And I'd done a lot of work with Sam Shepard. He and I had done a lot of things for plays. But a musical's different because every line has to be intentional. You know, you can't write just a cool sounding.
Yeah. It's narrative.
Yeah, it is narrative. And it became, it sobered me up quite a bit. And I read Sondheim's books and I started studying Frank Lesser, who I think was the greatest of all the Broadway composers, and Lerner and Lowe and all these cats. And it became clear that I was going to have to dance or get off the floor. Yeah. So I started waking up every morning at 4 a.m. for about a year solid and writing when it was quiet. And then when I got through writing the 20 songs for the musical, I couldn't stop writing. So I've written now, I don't know how many, we've recorded about 2 hours of music.
Fantastic.
That we're going to start putting out at April 12th.
Is the process of writing a song for a musical different than writing a song otherwise?
Yeah, it is because it does have to move the story along. But
do you start with the music first or do you start with the lyric first?
I started with the lyrics. Because it's, as you say, it's part of the book. It's part of the narrative.
So you'd write it like a poem, basically.
Yeah.
Would you have a melody in your head?
Yeah. Yeah. You know, melody is really just codified inflection. So it's your storytelling no matter what. Mm-hmm. So every sentence has a certain melody to it. Mm-hmm. And I was, I was doing that. I was writing, but I would have a sense of the melody as it was going down. And then, you know, I wrote, we're starting to put out records. I'm putting out 3 double records in the next year, this year.
Wow.
I'm going to kind of work hip hop because I see these cats, they just put stuff out constantly. Yeah. So we've recorded a lot of these tunes that have come afterward.
Yes.
I really stopped producing other people for the most part. Although.
Interesting.
I just made a record with Sarah Bareilles that's really beautiful.
I'd love to hear that.
She's a beautiful singer.
Unbelievable.
And, she's also gone through the experience of writing a play. She wrote a musical of Waitress. And it raised the stakes for her too. Her writing has become much more resonant, deeper and higher. It's interesting to hear her growth through the process.
Mm-hmm. How is a collaboration with her different than her other records, would you say?
We did it more live, mm-hmm. which is what I mostly do.
Yeah.
That's the thing I like most. The thing I love about making records is when people are playing and singing all at one time
it's
and you
best.
Get they get finished and you say, yeah, that's great. You know,
it's such a great feeling. It's such a, there's something about people playing together that no amount of getting it right.
Yeah.
Counters the energy of the interaction.
That's
of people
right.
really playing.
Yeah, perfection is a second-rate idea.
For sure.
And the computer is able to put out perfect music
yes.
all day long, but it's not nearly as interesting. It's like those Johnny Cash records you made with him just sitting in a room with some people, mm-hmm. turning them on to a song, mm-hmm. you know, and turning the whole world on to the song the same
yeah.
way.
Yeah.
So that's the process I like the most. And I think the band was great. She, you know, it was the same, essentially the same band that was on Raising Sand. Jay Bellerose played drums
great.
And Dennis Crouch played string bass and Rebo played guitar.
I love that album so much.
That Raising Sand record.
I love it.
Isn't that a beautiful
it's
record?
It's so beautiful.
Yeah.
It really took me by surprise.
Yeah.
I don't know why. I wasn't expecting it to be so beautiful and just blew my mind.
Well, you know, both of them have mystical, beautiful
yeah.
voices.
Yes.
And it was interesting to hear him soften up.
Yeah, but on paper, it wasn't necessarily a must-listen thing.
Yeah, right.
And then hearing it, it was mind-blowing.
Yeah.
I didn't know most of those songs, so I didn't know that they weren't original songs.
Yeah, so they were original for most people.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's got some of that same...
Beautiful.
Sarah's record has
Beautiful.
Some of that same...
How did that one come together?
Robert Nelson?
Yes.
Really, I think Bill Flanagan, you know Flanagan,
yeah, yeah,
don't you? Flanagan was doing that show Crossroads,
mm-hmm.
and I think he wanted to do a Crossroads with Robert and Allison, and it ended up being a record, and then we did a Crossroads later,
yeah.
but I think they met from that idea of Flanagan pitching them on doing it. They met and they did a tribute to Leadbelly or somebody up in Cleveland, I think. And they enjoyed it. And then they called me up and said, do you want to make a record? And I sent them those two Gene Clark songs. Those are the first two things I sent them,
yeah.
Through the Morning, Through the Night, and Polly,
yeah.
which I thought had that Gene had that dark mystical vibe that they both have. You know, it's interesting now to hear Robert sing low and soft like that
yeah.
and go back and listen to Led Zeppelin.
It was so beautiful.
Yeah.
It really showed another side. And
yeah.
it felt like a side that just the timing of it was right for him. You know,
yeah.
like to hear him sound like that was a revelation.
Yeah. Well, he sounded like a grown man.
Yeah. Made sense.
He says himself that the early Led Zeppelin records, he sounded like a castrato or something.
Yeah.
You know, he was singing so high.
Yeah. And I'd imagine that when he sings like that now, it's more like he's imitating the old him,
yeah.
whereas Raising Sand sounds like more believable now.
Yeah, I really don't think he could sing those songs. He couldn't sing them in the range he used to sing them in. You know, same with Elton. You know, Elton's voice has dropped a good octave or something
yeah.
like that, and he's got this beautiful, deep, resonant baritone now. And you listen to some of the old records; he sounds like he's on helium or
yeah.
something after getting used to his voice now and,
yes.
and loving it and going back and hearing them. Not that they aren't absolutely classic and great. Same for Zeppelin.
Was there any reason you didn't do a second one with? A follow-up to Raising Sand?
I don't know. I think we may.
So good.
I think we may do one of these days.
I would love that.
Maybe we should do one.
Great.
Maybe we should
do
it together.
Let's do it. It's such a beautiful album.
Yeah, I would love to do one again. We went in and recorded some songs, and having been through all the success, so to speak,
yeah.
the stakes seemed different when we went on in the second time.
Understood.
And it didn't feel, I don't think any of us felt the same kind of freedom that we had
felt
the first time.
It's so interesting. Isn't it interesting how the stakes changed the whole process?
Yeah. 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 So, but I think now it's been long enough, so we probably
For sure.
could go
yeah.
in and just
Square
play.
One.
Just play, you know.
That'd be great. Do you have ideas of songs?
I hadn't thought about it that much. I mean, there've just been rumblings about it. So we'll see where it goes.
Have you done any other collaborations like that where it's been two artists who don't normally work together?
I don't think I have. Hmm. Have you done that?
I can't remember.
I've done quite a few. You know, the Rolling Thunder Review, which was,
yes,
this studio was part of that whole time.
Yes.
That was a beautiful experiment. And it was a masterclass in art and show business. I mean, there was every, Allen Ginsberg and Ann Waldman were there. Sam Shepard was there. There were incredible musicians. Joni Mitchell was there. Yeah. Joan Baez. Yeah. And Howie Wyeth and David Mansfield, one great musician after another, Mick Ronson.
Yeah.
Mick
Ronson was part of it.
Yeah. Right. People from all different parts of the world and different disciplines and different places. But everybody came together and collaborated, and it was a tremendous learning experience that I've replicated or tried to replicate several times with, like, the Roy Orbison Black and White Night show. And
that was incredible too.
That was a beautiful evening.
Incredible.
And I saw it the other day. I was watching it, and Leonard Cohen was in the audience. I'd forgotten that. I think that idea of, like, Aerosmith and Run DMC, did you have anything to do with that?
I suppose so. I forgot.
Yeah,
it's hard to think. You know what I mean? It's hard to think about projects.
Yeah, I know exactly.
It's all just sort of.
It's hard to even look back at all.
For sure, and I rarely do.
Yeah, me too. Yeah. But that was certainly one of those that changed everything.
Yeah,
and people, the Beastie loved it. Boys changed. Yeah, yeah. You know, them doing "I'm Down."
Yeah, did you ever hear that?
Oh yeah,
because it never came out.
It properly. Never did.
No. We couldn't get permission. It was supposed to be on that first album, "License to Ill." Might have been the last thing we recorded for it. We couldn't get permission, and it never came out. But I think it's on, like, YouTube or somewhere.
I heard it. Steve Rubofsky played me.
Because he was our A&R guy. Yeah.
Yeah, and it was. I'm really D. You know.
Fully D.
I'm fully D.
I remember.
That's right.
Yeah. So funny.
So funny, man. Yeah. They were cutting up.
Yeah. I did that. I did the guitar solo and the organ solo. Neither are instruments that I really play. And it's really shows, you know, it's like.
Season 3 of Broken Record is out now. Find Broken Record on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you like to listen.